Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soci.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. This show, of course, is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, we got through another week, and hope you got to see some good movies that are new, or at least new to you, and as well as relying on old favorites. And we will get to the grab-a-pencil portion of the show in a little bit. But to use a line from the play I'm currently rehearsing and directing, we've got guests. Guests. You know, people. That's from Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, which is happening at the Cat in October. Go to IndieBardFest.com. And you'll see all the information there. And yes, I'll be shamelessly plugging the play I'm working on future film sociologies. But anyway, I have Louise Henderson, the executive director, and Daniel Arthur Jacobson, the programming director of the Can-Can Cinema and Brassiere, because I don't want to say Brassiere.
It's Brasserie.
Brasserie. See, that's Brasserie. You see, even if you have public radio, we mispronounce things all the time. But unfortunately, the inner Beavis in me saw that and went, Brassiere? No. So, hi, guys. How you doing?
Happy to be here.
We're good.
Here. And Daniel was reminding me, I had him on 100 years ago, back in the early incarnations of film sociology. So welcome back.
And I think I was here even about 200 years
200
ago.
Years? No, it doesn't show. Not at all. So
well, thank you.
So first off, congratulations. I know, you know, there's been businesses that had to delay and wait and then finally start opening. And you folks are officially open. So congratulations. About a month now, right?
Yeah, this is our fourth week of being open, delayed from March 2020. Yeah, we were a day away from opening.
Oh, my God.
And on March 13th, 2020, we made that fateful decision that the only responsible thing to do was close because the whole world was closing.
Yes, they were. And how much time between when you guys closed to when you started doing virtual screenings?
Right away?
Yeah, it was one of the first conversations we had. It was probably that next. I mean, we shut down, the weekend, and once we realized, oh, this wasn't just going to be a week, and then
right.
We just pivoted. And luckily, we were in a field that pivoted very quickly, the independent cinema world.
So. Yeah, because I think we all needed to watch something, anything that wasn't well, the news or the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, and the distributors, you know, they had these films ready to come out, so they just tossed them up there and you know, it's like spaghetti against the wall. How does this work? You know, they were making it up as they went along as well. And I remember, you know, obviously that was a Friday the 13th that we decided to shut down next week. You know, yeah, we're all staring at each other now, you know, what we didn't think would take 17 months to do, but staring at the screen at each other going, what do we do? You know, we had all this excitement and engagement and momentum. It's like, okay, how do we not lose that? How do we keep that going for, we thought, just a few weeks? Of course, it was much longer.
Yeah.
And we just started brainstorming right there. I mean, nobody had a roadmap.
Right.
So fortunately, the virtual cinema came along as an option, but that's far from the only thing we did.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Now, going back, tell us, what are the origins of Can-Can before COVID?
Huh.
The simplest story is just a group of people that really wanted an art house cinema community, nonprofit cinema downtown, found each other.
Right.
And basically we worked on it for years. You know, it stemmed from the Sam Sutphin and then the Batistas of the Bluebeard. And then I joined in. Then we found Louise Henderson. And we all kind of just, there's enough people in the car that the, you know, we actually
yep.
could move instead of just spinning our wheels. So And then also during that, we always wanted a bar, restaurant, somewhere you could talk about the movies. So then luckily Tom and Ed brought the Bluebeard portion of it, which we then brought Abby Maris with us to help run the kitchen. And yeah, we all kind of just came together and found each other. And
yeah, like moths to a flame, right? I mean, when you start talking art house, there's a very small group of us who have always known the city needs that. And we found each other really fast. And the Sutphins and Batistas had been looking for property for a while. They found the perfect spot. It's in a neighborhood, Near East Side neighborhood of Windsor Park. So we're not in a commercial zone, but part of us as a not-for-profit was to do more than just show movies. So locating in the Windsor Park neighborhood was fit very well with the initial goals. The initial idea was to renovate an old church that was on that property. Unfortunately, it was structurally unsound. So we have a new building, which is good because it's more efficient, right? It's a good use of space. We have nice big windows.
The soundproofing actually works, which I was very nervous about with an old church. But now you don't hear anything in any of the cinemas. So it's like there's that benefit. There's wonderful windows. You can see and we're very excited to be right next to the Space Park Library.
Right.
That gorgeous 1920s Carnegie Library.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, on our campus, then there are three renovated houses next to us that are small businesses. The first one is not quite open. Everyone's excited. It's going to be Amelia's. It's going to be a cafe, so it's going to have not just the great Amelia's goodies, but it's going to have full coffee service and a small menu and grocery. So Amelia's, which is going to bring a lot of people in, have great outdoor seating. And then next to that is a double, and there's a skateboard shop. Ryan Graves has Solace, and then a small hair salon, and then Martha Latta's Stomping Ground there at the end. So it's this little kind of low-density commercial node, local businesses.
It's a new destination.
Yeah.
The new destination neighborhood. Cool. Very good. So how was the experience of running Can-Can during COVID?
Constant innovation, reinvention, and I mean, we're 3.5 people, and we just worked so hard. We just never quit. Everyone just did everything. We collaborated. Of course, this was all working from home, and we just did everything we could. Suddenly, our digital presence became our front door. So, you know, our weekly newsletter was born. And we did at-home cinema in those first months when we were feeling alone, and it was a way to sort of all watch a movie at the same time and communicate over a private chat channel just to connect us at those dark days. And we just kept moving on. And of course, when the weather got better, we did outdoor screenings and we did virtual things, and you know,
some
being
Q&A sessions kinda.
Yeah, exactly. We're not for profit, so our admission projects, so we did filmmaker development and filmmaker town halls, and we did we even did some teen film education. I mean, we just tried everything, and it was good for us because it was proof of concept that our mission areas, of which there are four, were important and that there was a need for them. And we were able to prove that even with no money and no ability to use our physical space, we still did some pretty good mission projects. Yeah.
And we learned a lot. Like, we, even though it wasn't what we're doing physically now, we learned so much when it comes to just what, you know, when it comes to the filmmaking classes or when it comes to programming. I think we just got so much knowledge in those 17 months. So now we were way more prepared this time around. Like,
we were all kind of figuring it out. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. But Daniel's right. We learned things in that time that had we not had that, we wouldn't be working as smart today as we would have back then. And then the other thing we did, we just, again, sort of fell into this. We did a lot of private rentals. So within all of the capacity and safety guidelines, we had private rentals. And not only was that a great income for us, but it was an audience development tool. We brought people in the doors who might not have found us had it not been for these private events. So that ended up being a really busy part of what we did in those the 7 months of this year.
Now, for the private events, would it be just a group wanting to watch a certain movie on the big screen?
Yeah.
Or group meetings or what have you?
We did a variety of things. We had some, professional development, business-related things. We had family birthday parties. We had private family dinners. We just did a whole bunch of things. We have some film clubs or just film groups that just would rent it out and bring in some beer and some chips and watch a movie. So,
and then one of our favorite things towards the back end of the you know, before we opened, we premiered a couple local films, let them see it, like let them show to the cast and crew for a very affordable option. And those were so fun, so rewarding for them to see it, not just on their computer on YouTube, but mm-hmm. to see it on the big screen, see all that hard work pay off and see it the way they probably intended it to be.
Yeah. Oh, and the other really cool thing we did related to that was we partnered with Gang Gang to do an album listening party for Bless. They had a national recording contract, and we did three seatings this one day. And it was just, just all the creatives and all the great people that came through the door, getting them into the building, starting a great relationship with Gang Gang. You know, we're talking about things to do going forward with them. So it was an opportunity to do sort of these, you know, quasi-public things within all of the restrictions of capacities and all that, and get people through the door to mm-hmm. see the theater.
Not asking who, but who had the oddest film that they wanted to screen in the space?
Oh, God. Let's see. Well, we have this shout-out to the Marion County Public Defenders Agency Film Club.
Okay. Oh, you're going to name them. Okay.
They come monthly. And I love these folks. They're great film nerds, and they vote on film. And, yeah, they One Cut of the Dead was their August film. And then the theme for September is Bad Movies, and it's going to be the 1997 Batman and Robin.
Ooh.
Yeah. Mm. Ooh. So I think maybe that one might be the
okay.
in the running.
So when you guys were doing virtual screenings, which ones got the most traffic?
Oscar Shorts.
Oscar Shorts did very well. I think Minari did very well, too, because A24 kind of dropped that at the exact right point, which everyone was very excited about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think A24 had a very easy way of watching it because it's through their own website, and you just had to go through our link. Everyone's figuring out how to go. But, yeah, the Oscar Shorts, though, was very popular.
Cool.
And I think that got me really excited about showcasing those theatrically because they do it every year. And so we're really excited to see our audience loving that as a package. So
it's a great event, and yeah, it's a great opportunity. I mean, I'm really I wish they had that when I was a kid. They probably did, but it was less accessible, or you had to go to a college or something along those lines.
That's the brainchild of Shorts TV, and mm-hmm. actually the CEO Carter Pilcher is out of Terre Haute, Indiana. They're based in London, but good old Indiana boy heading it up. But that's their brainchild, and they packaged it. I've actually been on the other end of it, on the contract side, and how that works. And they contact all of the shortlisted Oscar Shorts, and, you know, they're ready to go with contract the moment you're announced. And they package these things together really well. The thing I'll note that we will bring every year that we did virtually and we'll do it is we'll bring all of the categories. So it will be animated.
Good.
Live action and documentary.
Yep.
The documentary is the part that hasn't been coming to the city, and we will be showing all three.
And friends, this is a great opportunity to see something that you probably know very little, if anything, about. And that is that's rare, especially those of us that are, you know, film nerds that, you know, I'm lucky if once or twice a year I will sit down and go, I have no idea what I'm about to watch. And that's a great feeling. And I know, especially with families and, yeah, the time out and the money and the sitter and everything like that, yeah, you obviously want the best evening possible. You know what you want to watch. For some of us, it's work. But the fact that you have that opportunity in giving a shot, and because, you know, one might not work, then, well, here's another one. So just take that chance, friends, when it comes to short films, especially in packages like this.
Yeah, we did also because we think short films are just a great, great form of storytelling. We did all through the pandemic Short of the Week. So every year,
cool.
every week, we highlight a different short. And that is coming back. Abby Specht on our team is she just has a huge we all love shorts, but she's got a great list. So she would come up with one. And, you know, we'd hit certain themes and things, and we'll be bringing that back. Just to, again, highlight that as an art form.
Okay. Now, you've been open for a month, right? How has it been so far?
It's been great. No huge hiccups. It went
smooth.
Pretty smooth. I think we've been bringing a great collection of movies to the city. We our first 2 weeks, we ran through a ton of titles. We opened up with Green Knight, Searching for Mr. Rugoff, and Emma by Pablo Larraín. But then after that, we kind of ran through some of our favorite movies from 2020 that we missed out on because we were closed. We also did a cinema series, so movies about movie theaters.
Mm-hmm.
But we kind of just ran through it, gave everyone a ton of options, and it's been a lot of fun so far. I cannot believe it's already been 4 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. So we settled in. Last week was our first week of just like a full week run of films. Mm-hmm. But bringing in, you know, a nice diverse group of titles. You know, I'd say people need to know that we're open. People need to know that it's safe in our theaters. We've got, you know, plenty of room to spread out. We've got advanced filtration. Our staff's vaccinated. Everyone wears masks. So, you know, come to the theater. Please come out. The bar and the restaurant are amazing. We've got an outdoor patio. It's been so smooth and great, but we just need more people. And I mm-hmm. get it. We're in a pandemic, but we're taking every precaution to keep you safe. And we want our staff and our families to stay safe. So no one's taking any undue risks, but you can come to the theater and spread out and feel really comfortable in there.
At the time of this recording, which is a Friday, are audience members masked right now in Marion County?
Masks are encouraged at our venue.
Okay.
And like I said, our staff are all vaccinated, and they, we all do wear masks.
Mm-hmm.
And most people coming in the door either have a mask or grab one that we have sitting out and put it on.
I have not seen the can on a phone, somebody's phone with an incident on the internet. So that's fingers crossed. That's good. That's good.
Well, you know, and here's a little known fact. Worldwide, there has yet to be a single case of COVID transmission in a movie theater. The perception is it's not safe, but what, we're sitting there, we're not talking. A lot of us have our masks on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not doing the things that tend to spread the COVID germs, and we've got the filtration system, hopefully, to capture all that, you know, get that air circulating and filtered.
See, there you go, friends. The more you know with the little thing, logo.
And I'll say,
yeah,
we're capping our capacity. We're cutting all of our capacity. We have cut our capacities all the, you know, by 25%. So in order to make sure everyone feels like they can spread out and have plenty of space between them and their neighbors.
And so you'll have it'll have that kind of press advanced screening feel to it. So there's not as many people. All right, so what is playing at the Can-Can this weekend?
This weekend we got a whole new slate of titles which we're really excited about this week. It's a nice diverse group. We have The Eyes of Tammy Faye, starring Jessica Chastain and Andrew Garfield, and you cannot believe it's Jessica Chastain under there.
I've seen the pictures.
Yeah.
I'm trying I'm just like, what is going to be the bigger challenge, the makeup job or portraying her as a sympathetic character? And sorry, I haven't seen it yet. I'm being a wise apple. I know. Sorry. You know, if you dig I, Tanya, there you go.
Yeah.
So anyway.
There you go.
Please.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're also showing the St. Vincent and Carrie Brownstein mockumentary thriller concert film hybrid called The Nowhere Inn.
Where's that section of the video store?
Yeah,
right?
I know, right? Yeah. They're branded as that, too, which makes sense. I've seen it, and it is all of those things. We are continuing a run of a great film with Riz Ahmed called Mogul Mowgli. Not enough people know about this movie. It, on the surface, the byline just seems so similar to his Sound of Metal. I think it's hard to, like, maybe mark it, but, like, everyone that's walked out of the cinema has all been like, whoa, I'm so happy I saw that. It's an incredible personal film for him. It's about a Pakistani MC who's dealing with his identity, with family, because he gets sick, he has to go home with his family and deal with those ties. Yeah. Oh, and then we also got the great documentary that everyone needs to see, My Name is Pauli Murray, who's the same directors as RBG. When they're researching RBG, they found out more and more about how Pauli Murray influenced her so much. They're like, well, we know exactly what we're going to work on when we get done with RGB.
Yeah, Pauli Murray was really a person before their time, and, you know, born in the early 1900s, black, non-gender conforming, brilliant, coming up with legal arguments that was used later for Brown versus Education and helped Ruth Bader Ginsburg in her landmark 1971 Supreme Court case. This Pauli Murray was just a person before their time,
mm-hmm.
And has been forgotten because we don't tend to remember people who are black and in Polly's case, struggling with gender issues that were not even acknowledged at the time. So thank God for Julie Cohen and Betsy West, the makers of RBG, for, bringing a much needed, much deserved late spotlight to a person who we all owe so much to. And not just in the legal circles, but in Polly spoke out against, racial segregation and, but had a lot of personal pain because the gender and identity issues that they faced and couldn't find the resolution to it in their lifetime.
And the last thing, I guess, we are, since we lost John Paul Belmundo, we're going to be showing Pierre Le Fou this week.
I was just getting to the coming soon section, so very good.
So
cool.
we're just doing two special screens that on Monday, the September 20th and Wednesday, September 22nd. But then we're also bringing Le Doulos the next week on Monday and Wednesday. So if you're a Belmundo fan or a French New Wave fan, come out and see those because I've never seen either one of those on the big screen. So I'm selfishly very excited to see
those. No, absolutely. To see – one, see anything on the big screen. But the fact that – especially older titles because, yes, friends, I know your TV is huge and it's not your TV. It's what you watch with it. But no, to be able to see an older title on a big screen, I think that's a great event.
And they're both 4K restorations from Rialto Pictures, who's – restored a lot of these, and so they're both going to look gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did La Piscine, mm-hmm. also a 4K restoration. And
by them, yeah.
Yeah.
And then also Mississippi Hands is coming as well, right?
Yes, we are showing, we did the kind of private premiere of that film by Will Wirtz and produced by Jake Huber, like local, they're workhorses, they're just always doing stuff, so... It's a beautiful film, so we're bringing it back for the public to watch. That is going to be Saturday, September 25th, and we're doing a matinee on September 26th. It's a 37-minute short. We're also putting another local short in front of it, so it's going to be a great kind of just hour presentation. I recommend all. And all the money is going towards the Indianapolis Film Project, which is our nonprofit, and with Mississippi, the character's family. So,
how has it been connecting with Indiana filmmakers?
Good.
I think with our background, I mean, I'm a filmmaker, and I was freelancing for years, so I got to know a lot of local filmmakers, which has been great. Then Louise, with working with Heartland and being a producer herself, she's been involved. So I think it's been, and then also just being with our connections with, Tom and Ed, who run Bluebeard, and then our bar staff, like everyone is kind of using, we're using our personal connections, but then also just trying to put the word out. And it's been really great working with local filmmakers and trying to get their work. And, if we work with one, then that friend talks to another friend. And it's been mm-hmm. cool to see the word of mouth kind of get around.
Yeah, because the city, what we're bringing is what we've never had, which is the Center for Film, for film and film art. And those filmmakers are finding us, and we're finding them. And we've got a lot of them slated on the schedule, a lot of films, a lot of locally produced films up on our schedule.
We had just had two productions filmed in our space in the last week. A friend of the Can-Can, Zach Cooper, is working on his feature. He filmed a scene in the Can-Can, and then also Heartland Film Festival, for their bumpers and for their intros, they filmed a scene in our theater too. So it's fun using the cinema as as an actual film location space, but then also working with filmmakers. So it's been fun already in our first 4 weeks.
And now I don't want to get into prices because it's public radio, but there are memberships available, and it is based on your favorite style of film.
Yeah.
Or at least your favorite type of film print.
Film stock, that's right.
Film stock, that's right. So.
Yes. Yeah. So, they're all film. They're Super 8, 16 millimeter, 35 millimeter, and 70 millimeter. So, four levels, keeping them basic, but great perks. And we urge people to go to our website, kinkyandindie.com, and check it out. There's a lot of benefits to being a member. It also just makes it easy to come and go see your favorite films.
Now, if you need a midnight movie, cult movie, connoisseur. And now that I have you on the spot, and Abdul, I'm going to do this. This is for both of us, Abdul Kim Shabazz. So I want you, when you leave here, I want you to look up a trailer for a film called Sugar Hill. It's a blaxploitation zombie film from 1974, shot in beautiful Houston, Texas. And I think that, you know, Abdul and I have been threatening to host a screening of this film for a long time. So I'm just saying, if you, you know, to get an audience and, you know, the fellowship that comes with Abdul and Film Sociology, I mean, yeah, he wrote it down. Okay, good.
Yeah, he wrote it down. It's there, baby.
So just throwing that out there. Thank you. So, yeah, cancanindie.com. So check that out for all the information and the events coming up and memberships and a destination spot. So,
yeah.
Now, what have you two been watching lately? And, what is work-related and what isn't? And that's kind of probably one in the same of if you wind up watching something going, hey, we could probably show this. So what have you been watching lately?
Well, obviously, we've been watching a lot of the movies we are showing, but total, like, just fun sidebar. In the pandemic, my friends and I started a virtual film club because we couldn't see each other. So we, like, go watch a movie on our own, then we all go talk about it. So,
not Contagion.
Exactly. That was not a selection, thank God.
You don't want to get that close to home.
We know it's funny. The never ending pile of movies that, you know, I was trying to go through, and I forgot I had this on Blu-ray, and somebody had brought up Elia Kazan, and I watched Panic in the Streets, which friends, you know, I know people that saw Contagion, and I'm the guy who ate a hot dog and read The Jungle in high school, but I was like, I'm not watching Contagion, and basically. Panic in the Streets is an Elia Kazan film from the 50s about a potential plague hitting New Orleans. And I'm like, oh, God, I don't like the subject matter. But it looks really cool. It looks really good. It's one of the better films shot in New Orleans back in the 50s. Anyway, continue.
No, it's all good. But this, we're doing guest week, so everyone's bringing a guest to pick the movie. So we're watching movies kind of outside of our traditional. So we've been hit with two musicals the past bit. So definitely we all watched Mamma Mia and critiqued that. And then
the first. Oh, great.
And then a film that I totally just was off my radar, but thank gosh we watched it. But Julie Andrews' Victor Victoria.
Oh, Bay's. Wow.
We just
really?
Watched that. Yeah,
congratulations. So that's a big one at the house. My daughter, I don't think we watched it during, I think it was before COVID, but yeah, she discovered that. Got right.
Yeah.
See, this is it, friends. It's new or new to you. So.
And yeah, we had a ton of talk about just with like how that movie handles gender, how it maybe like how the ending goes down with certain people. But then like it was really progressive for the time. And like,
yep.
And it was based off of 1930s German, like the original inspiration for it was so pretty.
That was a major studio movie in 1982, yes. Friends.
And I saw it when it came out.
Yeah,
so
same here.
Go.
Exactly.
Dates me, but I, yeah, at the time it was like, whoa, this is good.
And
this
I know, cool. And of course, I'm going to butcher it, but there's an exchange used in that in the celluloid closet of, you know, I think you need a good woman. And Robert Press says, you know, I think you do too. So nice. Louise, how about you?
Let's see. Yeah, a lot of just films that we're screening. I still do some programming work for a festival in Colorado, and we were making our final programming decisions in this one film about made by the filmmaker Max Lowe, and really good about his dad and their family, because his dad was really famous mountain climber, Alex Lowe, who died in an accident. Conrad Aker was his best friend and ended up marrying and adopting Max and his brothers. Anyway, so I watched that film, Torn, because we're showing it at Crested Butte Film Festival and next week. And then that got me back to Meru. I love Meru. So I rewatched it because Jimmy Chin and his wife, Elizabeth, and I always butcher her last name, Chai, actually, is what she goes by, Chai Vassarhelyi. That's going to be my best version of her name. They're incredible storytellers. And they've got the film The Rescue coming out. It premiered at Telluride. So I think I was just in a Jimmy Chin and Chai groove there, mountain climbing, yada, yada. And rewatch Meru and just, you know, that kind of filmmaking at altitude, but just the storytelling, the strength of it, and that's what Chai brings to it, and that's why I'm excited to see The Rescue. And that's a film coming out about the rescue of that soccer team in down in the cave. You know, if anyone's going to tell a good story, it's them. Of course, they're the ones that came out with Free Solo, which did so well.
I was exhausted. I think I burst into tears as well at the end when it was finally, because it was that, just that release of, and I saw it at my desk. I was at work, so I watched it there and was drained when that was all said and done. So.
Yeah, yeah, and they just tell that story so well. And you know, when you think about who they focus on in that, it's not just about Alex, you know, climbing. It's everything around it, and that's the strength of storytelling, and that's what draws me to film is good stories, right? It's a storytelling art. So for me, I think that was fun just to go on. A lot of me loves documentaries. I love all film, but it's just kind of fun to kind of go back in time. There's another film we got coming to Crested Butte that I hope gets enough of a release. It's called All These Children. And, you know, Bing Liu, Minding the Gap, came out with that great film a few years ago. And we brought it to Crested Butte with Bing. And he's got another film, and it's awesome. So I'm hoping people will come out and see that. When we bring it to the King, I'm just saying this. Hopefully. He's such a great filmmaker and just it gets to the heart of people in a way that not many other people do. So those are the films I've been seeing.
And what's the festival that you work with?
Oh, it's Crested Butte. Crested Butte, Colorado Film Festival. Beautiful little mountain town.
Now, are they also doing virtual? Because that's why you could plug it here.
They're doing it, yeah.
Hey.
Absolutely. In fact, that's... Thank you, Matt, for doing what I didn't. And that is...
Your pledge dollars at work, friends, right here. Smooth.
The thing about, I know virtual film festivals are really tough for the filmmakers because, well, for so many reasons, but...
Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I hear Christopher Nolan griping outside, so...
Yeah, but it is a way for you to attend film festivals all across the world, which is what I did last year. I went to all sorts of film festivals and from the comfort of my home, and I really recommend people to tap into that. So, yeah, Crested Butte, like a lot of festivals, is going to be hybrid. So we're going to have a limited in-person set of screenings, but most of it's going to be online. So it's cbfilmfest.org. Just a little plug there. I think their curation is pretty good for a tiny little festival. It's good. It's good curation. Mm. And I can only claim part of that credit. I'm assistant director of programming, not the full. Yeah. So,
our staff saw a lot of great Sundance movies that we're now programming in January because it was virtual. So like our staff actually got to attend it.
Yeah.
You know, we're like some of us like Louise goes out usually to Sundance. I sometimes will go, but like we are able to, like the three of us who program, we're able to see a lot of these movies that we normally and much more than we would have. So
that
it's cool.
That was really huge. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We saw so many great Sundance films, which just really helped set us up well for this year of programming. Like I saw My Name is Polly Murray. You saw Crypto Zoo. I mean, some stuff we've already programmed. We saw at Sundance.
Very good. So there you go.
At home in Indianapolis.
At home, right. So, yeah, let the film festival know they got some film sociology love here in Indy. So
please do.
All right. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. And just a reminder, you go to cancanindy.com to get all the information on screenings and what to eat, what to drink, and memberships and all that good stuff. All right. We will get to the grab a pencil portion in a little bit. But I want to fill you in on what I've been watching this week. As I mentioned, I've only been to, I think, three films in the theater. And part of it is just necessity. The other part is I'm directing a play, so my evenings are shot. So, a couple of films I got to experience thanks to Film Movement. And, man, if I always say Film Movement is kind of the, you know, movie of the month club, and they send you stuff. And, man, they cover the gamut. You should and if you think it's just highbrow, arty stuff, you are incorrect, because I got to experience from the United States the I can't remember when this came out. The film Higher Ed. It's a Jean-Claude Lamoureux film, and it stars Pras, for you fans of the Fugees, and Ari Spears, and stoner comedy with a college campus. The story of a mid-level drug dealer who's on the lam. He knocked up his boss's sister, and he goes into hiding by enrolling in college, as one to do. This is from 2001, friends. And so and then college stoner hilarity ensues. I'll tell you how old this figure is, because Ari Spears, of course, now is a huge comic, but it was still was a rising comic at that time. And you know, he plays the obligatory seven-year student who's still living there and getting high and doing imitations of Denzel Washington, Eddie Murphy, and Bill Cosby, because it's 2001, friends, you know, that sort of thing. although this is the type of film that don't think too much, obviously. This is a wake and bake type of picture, apparently. But Spears' character has a younger sister, an older sister, I should say, and which the our hero, our drug dealer on the lam, falls for. So the question is, how is it that Spears is a seven-year student and a little brother to the girl in question? Again, apparently we're not worried about that. It's like the story Mark Hamill tells of continuity when it comes to his hair and Harrison Ford responds. Not that kind of movie. if they're looking at your hair, you're in big trouble. So and that's higher ed, friends. So and for folks of a certain age, it's nice to see Ernest Lee Thomas, also known as Raj from What's Happening, still working, constantly working. He has an odd cameo in this as the campus attendant, custodian. So, yeah, I saw higher ed. I think I saw higher ed, so you don't have to. So, but if you're in the stoner comedies, it's there from Film Movement and from Lightyear, I should say, Lightyear.com. Also sent to me, also from Film Movement, is a film called Dead Pigs from Kathy Yan. This is the film I believe Kathy did before Birds of Prey. So it's one of the connecting stories. You have several different little plots, and you find out that they're all connected. We have set in China, where it could be the near future, it could be today. What's the difference? But you know, there's been a plague of dead pigs floating in the water in this small town, and that's going to be affecting some people. We have a homeowner who will not give up her home for development. We have the unlucky pig farmer who's up in debt. There's a busboy who has a crush on one of the regular customers, which is a rich girl who's having her own problems. Rich girls have problems too. And an American businessman living in China who's a part of the development company. And so if you're a fan of the look of Birds of Prey, this has some of the early flashes of that. Use of light, use of montage, use of music. It looks cool. And the connecting of the characters and the stories doesn't feel heavy-handed. I didn't feel like I was hit over the head when it was all said and done, and really wasn't hit hard with the big message, TBM. So, and if it was, it was in lowercase. So, because you've seen anthology collections before where they wind up, and but no, this one was well done. So, from Film Movement, look for Dead Pigs. The two older titles I got to revisit because the Blu-ray pile is never ending. I got to revisit A Bigger Splash. Do you remember A Bigger Splash?
We just showed.
Did you really?
We just showed La Piscine,
which is the original.
You're talking about the Luca Guadagnino one?
Yes.
It was one of my favorite movies I saw that year.
That year. I'm with you. That made my top 10. Tilda Swinton in an almost silent role as a rock star on leave, on rest and holiday with her boyfriend, played by Matthias Schernitz. Am I saying that right?
Better than I could probably do it.
I butchered your guys' business name, so I'm two for two. That's great. But then they have guests. They also have guests, not of a Virginia Woolf fame, but a wonderfully bonkers performance from Ralph Fiennes as
what a dance scene.
I can't think of Emotional Rescue and not think of Ralph Fiennes. And you see a lot of Ralph Fiennes in this, friends, so if you're into that. He shows up. He's an old lover and a cohort of Swinton's, a producer, and he brings along his daughter, played by Dakota Johnson, in full Lolita mode. And I loved I Am Love. And this is an easier film to handle than that. I love the heightened operatic feel of I Am Love. This one is more like a rock album.
This is the Rolling Stones version of I Am Love, right?
There you go. No. That's actually pretty good. No. Yeah, and the fact that the Stones agreed to be a part, well, not agree to it, but there's a couple references to a couple songs in an album. And yes, the use of Emotional Rescue is a highlight. Plus, anytime you get Ralph Fiennes to do comedy, yes, I know he's intense. He's intense drama guy. We've seen it. I got to see him do Shakespeare in London with Richard II, and I know that's his bread and butter. But so, like, between this and, you know, Wallace and Gromit, Curse of the Were-Rabbit, please let Ralph Fiennes do more comedies. Let him do that. So, but yeah, it was just fun to revisit this picture, and you know, what a better thing to watch the Italian sunset and the countryside with these four odd characters kind of getting at each other. The other one, now I hammered you with the title that Abdul and I want to host. Do you know Ninja 3: The Domination?
I can't say I watched it.
So
no.
Not into the Ninja franchise.
No, this is from the 80s. This is after Enter the Ninja and Revenge of the Ninja. And by the way, you don't need to see those to appreciate the subtle nuances of Ninja 3: The Domination. This is a canon film. I mentioned canon. You must watch the documentary Electric Boogaloo, The History of Canon Films. This is one of those. And it stars Lucinda Dickey, for you fans of Breakin' and Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo. Yeah, it's her. This is the film that she did before those. And the soul of a soul of a ninja takes over a telephone operator, a telephone worker, and aerobics instructor played by Lucinda Dickey. So if you're into Flashdance, The Exorcist, and ninja movies, this film is wonderfully bonkers. This is pizza and beer, several beers. And yeah, and then there Shokasugi comes in, who is the ninja cinema star, who has to, because only a ninja can kill a ninja. And that's what happens in this. Shot in Phoenix, Arizona, and just a ridiculous film. And also the fact that you have there's a commentary track with the director and one of the stunt coordinators. And, of course, the stunt coordinator is the guy who can be three characters in the same action sequence. And, you know, real stunts done by real stunt people. And when somebody is possessed and you have, you know, somebody shaking a refrigerator off camera, you know, you can CGI that today. You can do that. You know, you don't see the strings and the floating blade that is happening in this woman's apartment. But, yeah, Ninja 3: The Domination. You don't have to write it down. I'm just sharing it with you. So, but, you know, if Sugar Hill goes well, maybe that. No. But anyway, you're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Let's go around the horn and see what's happening at some other places. Okay. Since you were both here, last time you went to a drive-in.
Mine's been a long time.
Long time.
Do you remember what you saw?
Oh, yes, superhero movie with Jennifer Gardner.
Elektra?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
It's been long enough, I don't even remember.
There we go. Okay, well, here.
Young.
I didn't take advantage of the resurgence of the pandemic, but.
I know.
So, so many people went out, and I just, you know, we were, I think.
You've been working.
We were working.
That's fine. That's absolutely fine.
But Elektra, there we go. At least you figured out the.
Well, you met Jennifer Garner. Yeah,
that's totally forgot.
Well, okay, and that's fine. And that's well, and as you were mentioning earlier, as far as a handful of films, and of course, you know, big kudos for the drive-in to step in and help out. And there were also chances to see some older pictures. You know, it's kind of an old school nostalgia feel.
Yeah, I'm just so glad for the Tibbs drive-in that, you know, they hung in there and then boom, the world came to them during the pandemic. It was like they were the answer to everyone's movie going needs, and I love that. I love that they were able to do well.
So, I'm glad. Good segue. Over at the Tibbs drive-in, we have on screen one Candyman, the remake, of course, and Malignant. There's that. Screen two, Shang-Chi and Free Guy. Screen three, old school, The Goonies and Gremlins. So
nice double feature.
Nice double feature there. And then screen four, Cop Shop, which I know opened this weekend, and Beverly Hills Cop. So good combos there.
Sticking with some themes there.
Yeah, there's really, well, and because there are certain ones where I'm like, okay, it's the same studio. It's like, that's really about it. I'm like, oh, one for him, one for her. You're really hoping the kids fall asleep with the second feature, that sort of thing. So that's over at the Tibbs. Over at the Skyline Drive-In this weekend is, oh, here's a great example, Paw Patrol and then Men in Black. Yeah.
There we go.
And then Friday, September 24th, is Pandemonium Weekend 2021 and 25th at the Skyline Drive-In. The return of the Rocky Horror Shadow Cast and a lost film. So that's happening there. And then Friday, October 1st, is Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, and Freddy vs. Jason. Wow. So that's happening that weekend. And then Friday, October 8th, Drive-In Massacre. So you have to look into that yourself. That is all happening over at the Skyline Drive-In in Shelbyville. Over at IU Cinema on Tuesday, September 21st at 7 o'clock. This is to commemorate the publication of Indiana University Cinema, the new model, Singing in the Rain from 1952.
Good one.
That is a good one. On Thursday, September 23rd is a part of IU Cinema Under the Stars, Princess Mononoke.
Very nice.
I still have a Miyazaki box that I got to get through. So that's first world problems, as you know.
Yeah, we might no spoilers, but we might have a Miyazaki film part of our Halloween programming series. So
we are taking that Halloween programming very seriously at the Gankin.
So
you can count on us for good Halloween programming.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Sugar Hill. Sunday, September 26th, as a part of the Saturday Matinee Classics, the 1947 The Ghost and Mrs. Muir. Tuesday, September 28th at 7 p.m. as a part of the International Art House Series, The Green Knight. And Thursday, September 30th at 8 o'clock from 1996, this is a part of the International Children's Film Series, 101 Dalmatians. You Glenn Close fans there. And Tuesday, October 5th, Thelma and Louise, staff selects. That is happening at the IU Cinema over at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin this weekend, depending on when you listen to this podcast and depending when it comes up. Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Sullivan's Travels, another example of an older film in 35 millimeter. Saturday, September 18th, so Saturday morning at 10 a.m., the documentary Love, Gilda. Sunday, September 19th, is Game Train. That's a premiere, documentary about gaming. And all of that is happening over at the Historic Art Craft Theater. All right, friends, grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching. And we have three voices in here, so you better be good. No, we might talk about what you said, what you watched. And we start on Facebook with Teresa, who writes Ocean's 8. Rebecca writes, finally watched the High Fidelity remake series. Someone else in my house watched SLC Punk without me, and the Amazon Prime rental expired before I got to watch it. Sorry, Rebecca. Yeah, seek out SLC Punk. That's Matthew Lillard's best work. Yeah, Scooby-Doo be damned. But that's worth checking out. Gretchen writes Bob Ross, Happy Accidents, Betrayal, and Greed. I have to admit, I'm halfway through that documentary and already irritated, already angry. This is a documentary that will make you mad at certain things. And you're going to feel bad if you own any Bob Ross products. Just saying. Mike writes Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Glenn, hi Glenn Dobbs. Come From Away, the musical, just wonderful. So thank you, Glenn. Steven writes, saw the worst Lubitsch film we've ever run across, That Uncertain Feeling. So there you go. Thank you, Steven. Well, there's got to be a worse Lubitsch film, I guess. That's true. Joshua writes, Worth, Come From Away, Raya and the Last Dragon, Malignant, and The Courier.
Okay, Worth is worth watching. Very good.
So, cool. Excellent.
Recommend. Sundance 2020, it was there.
Oh, cool. Very good. Nancy writes To Catch a Thief and Event Horizon. Also, Halloween contender. No, Janet writes, you guys are good sports. Janet writes Rent, A Few Good Men, Stand and Deliver, Cadillac Man, World's Greatest Dad, and Chinatown.
Well, that's a variety.
That is a mix.
That is a mix.
Yeah.
I've known Janet for years. That's right up her alley.
Movie roulette right there.
Basically. And it's all in the mood.
I'll just say the one thing my husband wanted to do before the theater opened for real was screen Chinatown on the big screen.
I mean, he's still talking to me
yeah.
about that, and I was like, we'll make it happen.
Yeah.
At some point.
Fingers
really,
crossed. Yeah.
We got to see Chinatown on the
yeah. Love Chinatown. Yeah. Love yeah, despite who directed it, we love Chinatown.
I mean,
well, that's true.
I kind of want to do an L.A. noir series probably at some point, so we could do, like, Long Goodbye, Chinatown. It would be fun just to
L.A. Confidential. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Okay, now that's going
yeah,
in
I
my
know,
head.
Sorry.
So no, no, it's fine. That's this show, basically, yes. in podcast form. Skylar writes, Count Me In. It was awesome. Kevin writes, First Man and Days of Rage, the Rolling Stones leading up to Altamont. Ooh.
Ooh.
Chris writes, 20th Century Women, liked it. So did my daughter. I'm glad she dug that one as
His
well.
New movie's coming out soon,
yes,
too.
I saw the trailers with performance artist Joaquin Phoenix,
yes.
who looks like he's not a performance artist in this. He's just acting.
Yep.
So
we're very excited about it. We're trying to get that one over at the Can-Can, but yeah. we're really excited to see it. Heartland Film Festival will be showing that one also.
That's right. So Mike Mills.
You want to see it early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we will be a venue for Heartland Film Festival.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Very good. Yeah. Very good. Speaking of Joaquin Phoenix, Joe writes Buffalo Soldiers from 1997. The American Experience, John and Abigail Adams. So I mentioned that. Now you have to watch 1776.
Oh, God, yes.
Yes. July 4th tradition at the Soucy House.
Sit down, John.
That's right. Won't someone shut that man up? That's Abdul's theme. Anyway, Son of the Morning Star, SAS, Rise of the Black Swan, Guns of Navarone, The November Man, and Cruella. These are my listeners. These are my Facebook friends.
Eclectic.
Very eclectic. Dustin writes, Goodbye, Mr. Chips, from 1939. Now, Dustin, you have to watch Peter O'Toole and Petula Clark in Goodbye, Mr. Chips. Never forget, friends, Peter O'Toole has two musicals in his resume. Two. Then again, so does Burt Reynolds and Pierce Brosnan. Well, Brosnan's got three, so that's true. Like, so he's already 33% more than Burt Reynolds and Peter O'Toole.
Painfully so.
No, I'll tell this. So, yeah, I saw Mamma Mia. I saw Mamma Mia in an advanced screening. It was the most tense advanced screening I had ever been to. It was at a certain theater up on 96th Street. They had two theaters rented out and filled it. And the poor rep had to go and tell the old people that couldn't get in that they were not going to see the movie. And I like to use the term a brunch of Karens. They were, and they're older than that, Grandma Karen too, but they were not happy. It was the most hostile group of, because the thing is, friends, when it comes to the advanced screenings, it's like a plane flight. They overbook. They deliberately overbook mm-hmm. these things. And so anyway, saw it, and yeah, it took a little bit of time. Once the film embraced its silliness, it wasn't until Dancing Queen that it finally embraced its ridiculousness, and it was easier to watch. And yes, everybody makes fun of the guys, especially Pierce. But from Pierce's standpoint, you're doing a movie with Meryl Streep, and you go to Greece for how many? No matter, you don't turn that gig down.
To quote our coworker, Abby Spector, who's not here, she values Pierce Brosnan's performance because it reminds her that maybe someday she could be in a musical too.
Thank you, and I'm getting to that. So then. So yes, easy low-hanging fruit, make fun of it. And then I auditioned for a musical. I auditioned at Richmond Civic for Spamalot, and I hadn't auditioned for a musical in probably over 20 years. Didn't get it, but I had fun. I still had a good time, and I felt decent singing, and I said that Pierce Brosnan could kiss a certain part of my anatomy. Not that, the other. And it just felt good. And then I wound up doing a couple more musicals, and I've turned. I'm like, it takes serious stones to be able to do that and then have it captured on screen forever. And he's got three now. And so, but it was also the celebrity oaky aspect, which is happening in musicals these days. And I remind people, because I'm old enough, and we mentioned it with Peter O'Toole, you know, in the late 60s, early 70s, studio bosses thought, can we get people who sing in musicals or do we put movie stars in musicals? And they went with the latter.
Well, what about La La Land, right? Yeah. Let's cast two people who really don't dance.
But they do. But I'm still on the La La Land train. I still enjoyed Everyone Says I Love You. I still enjoyed Love's Labor's Lost because not everybody sounds and dances and moves like Marnie Nixon mm-hmm. and your stunt doubles.
Did you see Annette?
I did.
Okay, that's another one in that category. Yeah, a new one.
That thing needs to be at least half an hour shorter.
Amen.
But
that opening.
But
is
it's
worth
got pure chutzpah to go down that route with those people.
Yep.
So no, I'm with it. I think it brings musicals to everyday people a little easier, because the one thing that everybody makes fun about musicals is we're sitting here, we're having a conversation, and then we burst in the song. And apparently nobody can buy that, especially you Marvel science fiction fans. But so the fact that it humanizes the musical genre, I don't mind that. So anyway, that's long story long. But yeah, Peter O'Toole got two musicals, this and Man of La Mancha. So anyway, Dustin, you get all that? Fine. Watch Goodbye, Mr. Chips. All right. Back to the list. Dan writes Blazing Saddles and A Have and Have Not. I don't know if that was a double feature, but that's not a bad combo right there. Judy writes, I'm not sure I mentioned these last week. It's okay, Judy. It's fine. Wind River and The Dig. This week, Worth. So,
okay.
And I love when people say, I didn't watch anything this week, and yet you posted that you didn't. Thank you. Abby writes, oh, for the first time, Labyrinth.
Oh.
The film that launched 1,000 girls and some guys, too, really. Mm-hmm. And Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. Mm. Again, hopefully not a double feature. Eric writes, first view, Palm Springs. Nice.
Oh, nice.
Good.
Yep. This generation's Groundhog Day. Mm-hmm. His rewatch, Contagion, The Mosquito Coast, and Getting Straight. Wow. Also revisiting and enjoying ER season one. Joan, that's for you.
Okay.
Channing writes, Malignant. Let's see. Kurt writes, Saturday Night was Frost Nixon.
Ooh,
that was the very first film I reviewed on the show with Sky Point to Ed Johnson Ott. Our second Sunday musical was Yentl, just in time for the Jewish High Holy Days.
Oh, God, I haven't thought about Yentl.
Yeah.
Ever.
Well, there is, and while I'm shamelessly plugging, there's a really cool podcast called You Must Remember This.
Yeah.
And that's what I've been listening to for, God, about a month. And there's a whole section on Babs and her 70s output. So, yes, that is in the head. Lou Harry writes, Unforgiven and The Eyes of Tammy Faye, and I can't forgive the latter. I hear you, Lou. I know what you're doing there. Jackie writes, Worth. Doug writes, In Old Chicago, Luxury Liner, and Late Autumn from 1960. Chris Lloyd writes The Eyes of Tammy Faye, Storm Lake, Kate, Imprez, A Sexplanation, Seating Change, The Power of Conscious Commerce. And congratulations, Chris Lloyd, on your new movie review gig over on Fox 59. Dee Dee Servino writes Xanadu, which you must watch every week. So, yeah, Drinks with Dee Dee podcast. I'm not on it. I haven't been on it lately because I'm in rehearsal, but listen to that podcast. That's fun. Yeah, she watches that every week. And I think she just does that to make fun of me. Yeah, never forget, friends, Gene Kelly's last musical. Yeah. It's either that or Fred Astaire in Finian's Rainbow. When that's your last musical, that's...
Wow.
Yeah.
Trivia.
Mm-hmm. Kim writes Wonder Man. Austin Glidden, Medium Cool podcast. Blowout from 1981, my favorite De Palma film.
That's so good.
Mine too.
Yep. And thank you, Criterion, for putting it out.
Yeah. Saw it when it came out.
Same here.
There you go.
I know. I was 11. And
I was older than that.
But you don't look it. Then or now.
Yeah. But yeah, it's probably my favorite Travolta performance,
it's really
too.
Yeah.
One of them. I mean,
that's really strong.
Yeah.
It is.
Just because I love the movie, but his performance is so good. Yeah.
I remember because my summers, my parents would send me to my grandmother to my grandmother's house, who lives in Trenton, New Jersey. And so I was there because if I remember, the film came out in the summer and it was shot in Philadelphia. So all the Philadelphia news coverage was just a gaga about this, because I think this was the biggest film shot in Philly since Rocky. So that's about 5 years. Rocky II, that's
true. Yeah, that parade scene really showcased. I mean, they had to put a lot of work into it and showcases Philly. Like,
yep,
yeah.
It does. And it's a rare example. Well, I'm sure there are exceptions to the rule, but there are rare examples where I prefer this over Blow Up. Mm-hmm. I just think it's more energy and everything that you like about a De Palma film, and really some of the stuff that you don't like in a De Palma film is done well in this. So,
agreed.
Anyway, thank you, Austin. Scarface from 1983, case in point. the original 310 to Yuma from 1957, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, Malignant, Fargo, and The Man Who Wasn't There. Thank you, Austin. Devin writes Billy Elliot the Musical. Nick writes, Nick Rogers, Malignant, Reminiscence, PTU, The Burning, and Back to the Future. Michael writes, I watch mostly series over the past couple of weeks. That's all right. They post those too. I did watch a terrific small movie starring Sally Field and Tyne Daly, Hello, My Name is Doris.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. It was so incredibly charming, and parts are laugh-out-loud funny. The subject of ageism is addressed as well. It's a tour de force for Field.
Yeah, that's good. Recommend.
Yep. David writes, Black Widow, season one of Barry, Shang-Chi. Am I saying that right?
Shang-Chi.
Sorry. This is public radio, and pronunciations are important. Vertigo, The Graduate, Dark Phoenix, and Malignant. Patrick writes, Bridge of Spies.
Good one.
Yep. Daniel writes, Born to Dance, Follow That Fleet, Ninotchka, and Sweet Smell of Success. Love Sweet Smell of Success. Sam Watermeyer writes, had a big movie weekend Friday, a double feature of The Eyes of Tammy Faye and The Card Counter at Keystone Art Cinema. The latest Downward Spiral cinema piece from Paul Schrader, my go-to guy if you need white guys going down an emotional spiral. And since I am now old enough to be a character in a Paul Schrader film, there is that.
I mean, I think the one of the press photos of that is Oscar. Isaac sitting there with a glass of whiskey writing something down. I was like, is this just the First Reformed?
First Reformed.
I was like, it's could have swapped out. I was like, he's on one right now. He's definitely.
There was a thing this week of on Facebook, and I wound up making fun of it, of there was a contest with tie-in with this film, and the winner got to, I believe it was Las Vegas. I hope I'm right. And if it's not Las Vegas, it's Atlantic City. But you get to go on a gambling thing in really with a Paul Schrader. And I said, what's the next contest? Driving a cab in New York, or working at a mega church, working a small church next to a mega church, and then fighting eco-terrorism.
Yeah.
Seriously, what else? Follow a gigolo, or of course the other great one that was brought up. You get a tour of the porn houses of San Diego, San Francisco, and Los Angeles, thanks to Hardcore. Just a weird of all the filmmakers to get a contest, Paul Schrader.
I do need to see The Card Counter, but I did love First Reformed as much as I'm
that was my
about.
Favorite film that year.
Yeah, I love that movie.
I just thought that. It was less than the last third. It was just that last little part. I think he just didn't know what to do with it. And so he just went. I don't know. I was like, really?
I think he wanted you to feel like that.
I think he did too.
I was so with him. I mean, every shot, every line.
Were you sitting there going, end it now,
like,
end it now,
Paul,
end it now?
Paul, don't. Don't take the easy way out.
Paul's been having a rough time lately.
Yeah.
Social media does that apparently to some folks. So
I was disappointed because I was really in it up till then. It just went a little.
So I need to I need to check that out. And also with Oscar, I need to check out Scenes from a Marriage because I love the Bergman version and I like both of them. I just want to see how you do it. It's now becoming morbid curiosity. Sam also saw Malignant at Regal Noblesville. Thank you, Sam. Mary writes Beyond the Time Barrier and Time Travelers. Gregory writes Journey's End, Oblivion, and Inglourious Basterds. Thank you. Ed writes X-Men and X2, Kate, Tomorrowland, and Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. Monica writes, we did watch X-Men Apocalypse, way better than reviews would indicate. Thank you, Monica. Eric writes, Karate Kid 2 and Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. not a double feature. And, of course, Eric another Eric chimes in, a little uplift, a little nihilism. Trudy writes, learning to drive. Okay, that's from my youth. Pat writes, the eyes of Tammy Faye. Lila writes, nobody. Odenkirk at his finest. Then watched a couple of kid movies, which she deemed meh. Shazam, Tangled, and Strike. So, Tony writes, guys and dolls. Marlon Brando sings. And Day for Night, one of the best films about filmmaking. Jeff writes, The Lass of Mrs. Cheney from 1929, We're the Millers, and Labyrinth. More Labyrinth. Mm-hmm. Lisa writes, Still Mine, an understated, powerful movie, or maybe it just hit too close to home. It's okay, Lisa. That's all right. Wow. Steven wrote, The Director's Cut of Once Upon a Time in America. Great Sergio Leone film. Yeah, find the director's cut. Find the long one on this one. Trust me on this, friends. I remember where Siskel and Ebert, I couldn't remember if they did or did not do. They put, like, both versions on their best and worst list. So, yeah, do not see the studio cut. Look for the director's cut. Helen writes, Red Lights and Cruella. That's because you're in London, Helen. That's why you're doing that. Jed Bryan writes, watch the new film Bad Candy, one of the best horror films of the last 10 years. Highly recommended. Dylan writes, Take It Out in Trade, one of Edward D. Wood's later in life entries into adult movies. It's essentially a nudie cutie. That uses a lot of the same footage repeatedly. But the new transfer by AGFA and Something Weird Video is absolutely beautiful. You can really see Ed's crow's feet. Wow. Yeah, we get those. These are my listeners, I hope. Joan writes, worth, and it was worth it. Scott writes, I've got a good one. Oh, I've got a good one this week. Thank you for writing that, Scott. The Outlaw Josie Wales. That was the first Clint Eastwood film I saw in the theaters. And yes, Cry Macho opens this week if you want to see 91-year-old Clint. Meg writes, Ziegfeld Girl and Dead Poets Society. Joey writes, Up in Arms, Vanilla Sky, The Butterfly Effect. God, I hope that's not a double feature.
Yeah, that would be a rough
one. That's
a
bad, that's rough. Blade Runner 2049, theatrical cut of Blade Runner, and Infinite. Hmm. Jessica writes, Cruella, The Old Ways, and Queen of Spades. Millicent writes, not sure if this counts, but the two-hour documentary was quite good. The American Experience, Sandra Day O'Connor. Robert Muggy writes, Flowers of Shanghai, Shanghai Triad, A Touch of Sin, The Apartment, Sabrina, An Affair to Remember, the Leo McCary version, and Cutter's Way. Good cult movie there. Nikki writes, Doctor Strange, I'm starting to get into some of the Avenger movies. That's all right, Nikki. They're all there for you. All 20... two of them, or I've lost count. Gary writes, E.T., the original Blob from 1962. Do you remember Little Darlings? Mm-hmm. Tatum O'Neill and Christy McNichol at camp, young Matt Dillon? Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you, Gary. You saw that. Star Wars Episode 9, Rise of Skywalker. Saturday Night Fever, The Matrix, The Wild and Wonderful Whites of West Virginia, oh, wow, and Blood Feast. Now, that's a double feature. I know you saw those two together, Gary. John writes, Dirty Work. Yep, Sky Point to Norm MacDonald. If you want a tribute to Norm besides The Roast and him appearing on talk shows, look up Dirty Work. And The Muppets from 2011. Not a double feature. Mario writes 1917 and the 1930 version of All's Quiet on the Western Front. Linda writes Those Who Wish Me Dead and The Heights, both meh. Okay, I liked In the Heights more than you did, Linda. Nick writes As Tears Goes By, Days of Being Wild, both by Wong Kar-wai. Terry writes The Taking of the Pelham 1-2-3, the original. Don't need Denzel and Travolta in that. Do not need that at all. And there was a great thread, which I will not read, about how good this film is. One friend of mine calls it the quintessential New York City film. And this is also in that there was three films in a row where Walter Matthau was sort of an action star. This, Charlie Varick by Don Siegel, and The Laughing Policeman. So way to go, Walter. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, see, there were aging geezers in action films long before the current crop that we have right now. So, Melissa writes Johnny Dangerously. Wow. From 1983. Abby writes, I went on a library binge. Jess Mercy, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, 2019 Shaft, Bend It Like Beckham, El Dorado from 2010, and 1917. Kevin writes, The Courier. Melissa writes, Four Good Days and Dear Evan Hansen. Oh, you got to see Dear Evan Hansen. Now, Melissa, is this the one with or without the de-aging of its lead? Got to know these things. That's happening. Kathy writes, To Catch a Thief. RJ writes, No movies as of late, but I'm all caught up on Restaurant Impossible. Thank you, RJ. That also features film sociology regular guest Robert Irvine. Here, let me pick up this name I just dropped. Michael writes, Chaos Walking, The Courier, Malignant, When Worlds Collide, Train to Busan, and White Zombie. That's good for Halloween. Vicky writes, Do Netflix movies count? Yes, they always count. Saw Worth and Sweet Girl. Got to answer the questions. Mm-hmm. You know, they have questions. Britt writes, The Matrix, Hitchcock, RKO 281, The Original Planet of the Apes, and Gladiator. Aggie writes, really random, but we had it at the library. The Dollmaker TV movie from 1984 with Jane Fonda and Lee Von Helm. Such a gem. Thank you, Aggie. Yeah, anything with Lee Von Helm, I'm all for. Moveen writes, first time ever, The Wild Bunch. Love that movie and William Holden. Yes, that is Sam Peckinpah's masterpiece. Also got to see that on a big screen. I was, how was 20th anniversary? Yes. The 30th anniversary at in Chicago on a big screen. So check that out. And finally, oh, Stephen Stolen, the host of Stolen Moments, Sundays at 6, Tuesdays at 8 here on WFYI Radio. He saw Mrs. Doubtfire. So there you go. So any did you write down titles based on – not for screening, but for your own entertainment purposes there?
I see Sugar Hill written over and over for some weird reason.
He's so good. I appreciate that. Y'all are so patient.
Daniel will be back on soon because
I'll be watching Sugar Hill just for the review.
He'll tell me. Trust me. He'll tell me what he thinks of it. So
getting good with Matt.
Oh, cool. Yeah. All right. Well, once again, friends, go to cancanindie.com for all the information. Go check it out. Have a full evening. Hang out in the neighborhood. That's what it's there for. And before we wrap things up, I do want to raise a glass to actress Jane Powell. Best known for her work in Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, Royal Wedding, A Date with Judy, and 2 Weeks with Love. So salute to you, Jane. All right, friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Hopefully you got to watch something new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Louise and Daniel, thank you so much for hanging out.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us. This is awesome.
Good to have you both back. We'll try not to make it last as long, a big a gap as last time.
Well, and I hope we'll see it at the Can-Can.
I'm working on that. As soon as Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf is off the ground at the Cat in Carmel, and then Elizabeth Rex in Lawrence, we'll get there. But yeah, cancanindie.com. Thank you, gang.
Thank you.
Go see a good movie, friends. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What kind of parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
Okay. We'll do it live.
Okay.
No. We'll do it live!